Leadership is leadership. I don't care where you learn it. I don't care where you practiced it. The principles of being a good leader are the same. They haven't changed in 2,000 years, and they're not going to change for 2,000 years. And really, servant leadership is about taking care of the people that you have the privilege to lead. And it is a privilege. I think we have to be transparent, and we have to be as completely honest with whoever we're serving as much as we can. You never turn down an opportunity to be a leader. I don't care how small that opportunity is. A boss is going to say, you're not meeting the standard, fix it. A leader says, okay, you're not meeting the standard, here's where you are, and this is how we are going to fix it.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Dr. Stacy Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Oak McCullough about servant leadership and leadership development.
This episode is made possible by Cover, an all-natural military-grade mineral sunscreen lotion. Providing broad-spectrum protection in an SPF 30, Cover blocks 97% of harmful UVA and UVB rays, but is light enough to allow your skin to breathe. First responders often spend long hours in the sun, and prolonged skin exposure is one of the hazards of the job. First responders love Cover because it won't stain clothing, and the 4-ounce bottle fits easily into a backpack or go bag. Go to kovr.respondertv.com to get 15% off all Cover sunscreen products. That's kovr.respondertv.com.
Like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website for past episodes. It's respondertv.com. We'll be right back to speak with Oak after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Wimley, LCSW, EMTB.
Today we're joined by retired Lieutenant Colonel Oakland McCullough, who's a nationally recognized keynote speaker and author of the 2021 release, Your Leadership Legacy, Becoming the Leader You Were Meant to Be. Both his leadership presentation and his book are based on his 40-plus years of leadership experience, and that includes 23 years as a combat arms officer in the U.S. Army. And Oak highlights principles that will benefit today's leaders and inspire the leaders of tomorrow in any profession and at any level of leadership. Oak, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show, Dave and Stacy.
So, Oak, I'd like to start by asking you to just give us a little background on your leadership experience.
Yeah, thanks, Stacy. So I did 23 years in the Army. I was a leader in high school, if you want to count that.
That counts.
Yeah.
What did you do? Like, in what way were you a leader?
Yeah, I was captain of my baseball, basketball, football teams. I was student government president. I was student class president, those type of things. So did that. And then I went off to West Point, got some leadership while I was there. Came in the Army. My first 5 years, I was an infantry officer. My last 18 years, I was an armored cavalry officer. Had multiple leadership experiences from platoon leader all the way up through, I ran an Army ROTC program my last assignment. So I was helping to produce the next generation of leaders for the, not only for the Army, but for the nation. Mm-hmm. And then when I retired from the Army, I ran a food bank for a couple of years. I ran a food bank in Mobile, Alabama, ran the day-to-day operations that covered 52 counties along the Gulf Coast from Mississippi through Alabama all the way into the panhandle of Florida. And I took that over about a month before the BP oil spill. So that was an interesting time. Well, and then I've became a government service officer in my current job that I have until 1 October when I retire from this job. And doing some leadership positions here, again, helping to produce the next generation of leaders in the Army ROTC. So had quite a bit of leadership experience over the years. Loved every minute of it. I wouldn't trade any of it.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were wired at an early age for that kind of work.
Well, you know, I was the oldest in my family, as my wife is as well. So, you know, you kind of naturally take up that leadership position for the, at least for the children. And, you know, my father always taught me that, you know, if nobody is in charge, then you step up and you take charge. You don't have to be in charge, but if nobody else is going to be in charge, then you need to be.
And there's a term which I guess I hadn't heard it till a couple of years ago, and it kind of made me shake my head, like, what does this mean? And the term is servant leadership. I wanted you to kind of give us your definition of that and tell us why it's important.
Yeah, so for me, you know, and I've been lucky in my career. I had some great mentors, and I worked for some great leaders who were servant leaders. I've also worked for those leaders who were micromanaging, authoritarian. You know, nobody wants to work for those people. We've all worked for those people. But I've had some great ones that were servant leaders and kind of taught me what it was all about. And really, servant leadership is about taking care of the people that you have the privilege to lead. And it is a privilege. And so for me, it's all about that. You know, when I talk to all these young men and women over the years that I've had the opportunity to help develop as leaders, I always tell them a couple things. I say, number one, it's not about you, and yet it's all about you. And they always tell me, they say, well, Colonel McCullough, how can it not be about, how can it be all about me and not about me? And I say, well, it's not about you and the title you get or the privileges you get, or that you get better pay and you get to drive a nicer car and live in a nicer house. That's all nice. And leaders sometimes get those things. And that's great, as long as that's not the only reason you want to be the leader. That's the only reason you want to be the leader. Go do something else.
Yeah.
I said, it is all about you and how you treat the people you have the privilege to lead and how you run the organization that you have the privilege to run. And for me, that's about taking care of people. And I always get people who say, well, Colonel McCullough, I really want that next promotion. I really want that pay raise. And I said, well, if you are truly a servant leader, you will get those things because you're taking care of people, making them better, which then makes your organization better, which then you get credit for in the end. And you're going to get the things that you want, but you get them for the right reason, not because you were selfish, but because you took care of other people.
Yes. And one of the things, you know, I've seen in my fire career is that with the promotion came other perks, definitely a raise in salary, being stationed, you know, at a different house where you may not have to go on as many EMS calls, just having, like, you know, it was a desirable position, but that also made people interested in it for the wrong reasons.
That's right.
Like you're saying. And I think the promotion process really needs to vet the people that are in it for the right reasons. And in your career, like, is there something you did when you were involved in the promotion process that helped to kind of sift through who was really a good candidate and who was really just looking for a pay bump or something like that?
I guess I did that somewhat as an officer in the Army, but in the job I'm in right now, recruiting for Army ROTC, I interview a lot of high school students who are looking for an Army ROTC scholarship. And one of the first questions I ask them is, why do you want to be an officer in the United States Army? And if they tell me to take care of people, to lead people, now we're on the right track. And I've got my interest. If they say, because I want my school paid for, or I want to be in charge, then I say, okay, we're probably not the right candidate here.
Right.
Because, you know, the other piece of that is, when I talk about, you know, the promotions of people, and I talk about people getting promotions, I always say, look, you earn that pay raise. You earn living in that nicer house, getting those extra privileges as you get promoted. But also remember that promotion comes with more responsibility and more accountability. And that is more important. And you need to understand that more than you enjoy the pay raise and living in a nicer house.
Come on.
Check it.
So can you speak to like leadership development? You know, is there what's your go-to as far as principles about training leaders, you know, if they want to become a leader or a better leader? And then, you know, and why is a leadership development program so important to an organization?
So I think there's two pieces to that. Number one, the leadership development program is not only for the leaders, the current leaders, to make them better leaders, but you also have to have one for people who are at the entry level and lower levels who are aspiring to be leaders. And I always tell people, look, it's important to have that, because if you don't provide that and you've got people who want to be leaders and eventually are looking to move up and take over higher responsibility, if you don't have a program that helps develop that, they're going somewhere else that does, because that's what they want to do. That's a goal of theirs in their life. Mm-hmm. And you've got to provide that for them. For current leaders, I think it's important, because I don't care how long you've been a leader, you can always be better, always. Mm-hmm. And if you ever think that you can't, you need to go do something else, because yeah, at that point, you're not going to be an effective leader. So I think there's a couple of key things that I think that you have to happen. I think I'm a firm believer in reading. You know, the Harry S. Truman quote that not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. I absolutely believe that. And I tell young men and women and anybody else who I'm talking about with a professional development program is that you need to have a professional reading list. You know, the Army has one, the Marine Corps has one, the Air Force has one. I'm sure that there's one for the police department, for the fire department somewhere, if you really want to look for it. And if they don't, then you need to develop one. What are some books that young leaders or people who are already leaders that need to get better need to read? And it doesn't have to just be in your profession. I'm a firm believer that reading outside your profession about leadership is very important, because, again, your profession doesn't have all the answers in leadership. People are shocked when they ask me, so what's your favorite leadership books? And I always tell them my first two, my third one is a military one, but my first two have nothing to do with the military. Mm-hmm. The best leadership book I've ever read in my life was John Wooden on leadership. You know, famous college basketball, probably the greatest basketball coach that ever lived. And what a great book. And if you ever read it, you know, because he understood it wasn't about him and it wasn't about producing national championship basketball teams. Now, he did that. He was obviously good at that, but he understood it was about producing young men that were going to be productive members of society, who were going to be good young men. And if you look back and you hear all the testimonies of people that he coached, he did a great job of that. And the second book that is one of my favorite books is Lee Iacocca's autobiography. And I always tell people, read autobiographies, because then not only do you learn what somebody did, you learn why they did what they did. And that's sometimes just as important as what they did.
Absolutely. And I got to say, this is the second time today that somebody's mentioned John Wooden's book. I was listening to a podcast earlier by some guys with corporate backgrounds, and that was one of the books they mentioned. So it's got to be a must read.
It's an awesome book. It really is. Yeah. And then the last piece of that professional development is I always tell you got to have hands-on piece to it. Mm-hmm. I can stand here and I can bring 1,000 people in that are supposedly experts on leadership and tell you everything that you want to know about leadership. And that means nothing until you actually get out there and put it to practice. Right. You know, practice does make perfect. And, you know, I I'm a firm believer you never turn down an opportunity to be a leader. I don't care how small that opportunity is, you take it. I want to be the leader everything I do. I don't care what it is, I want to be the leader. Now, I understand when I go home tonight and I walk in the front door, I'm no longer the leader. I got the reason I've been happily married for 36 years. I know my place. But when I walk out of the house tomorrow, I want to be the leader again.
Right.
Because that's the way you get better at it, is to be the leader.
What were some of the biggest challenges that you came across as you were stepping into a leadership role or advancing as a leader? What were some of the biggest challenges for you?
Yeah, I think the first challenge for me was at high school. Because I tell people all the time, if you can lead your peers, you can lead anybody. Because that's the hardest leadership position in the world, is to lead people that are equal to you. That's the hardest thing. So equal in rank or in status. Yeah. So if you can do that, that's great. So that was probably one of the hardest things, at least initially, which then helped me in the next step that I took. Because in the military, as you come in as a second lieutenant, you're a pretty young person and you're leading people who are much older than you usually. I'll give you an example. My first platoon, I took over as an infantry platoon leader, and I took it over. My platoon was already out on the live fire range. They were practicing dismounted live fire across an objective. So they were running across an objective, machine gun firing 5 feet in front of them as they were live bullets, as they were running across. They hadn't done it live yet. They'd been practicing it all morning. I got there at noon, and my platoon sergeant, I remember him very well, Sergeant First Class Penson. He's about 6'6", 250-pound, big old country boy from Mississippi. He grabbed me by the shoulder, and he said, "Come on over here, sir. Let's go have lunch." And we went and sat underneath a tree, and we're eating an MRE lunch. And he said, "Look, sir, I was 24 years old. He said, "Look, sir, you're the platoon leader. We'll do things any way you want to do them. You're the boss." He said, "But I've been in the Army for 23 years. He'd been in the Army almost as long as I'd been alive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He said, "I've seen it done every which way it can be done." He said, "If you're messing up, I'm going to tell you. If you still want to do it, we'll do it that way because you are the boss." He said, "But I'm going to tell you when you're messing up." And I can remember times when I would try to make a decision without even talking to him, consulting him, asking his opinion. And I walk up to him. I say, "Hey, Sergeant Pinson, you know what I want to, this is what I want to do." And I tell him, and he'd look at me and he'd say, "Is that really what you want to do?" And I say, "Well, I don't think so anymore."
Right.
Why would you not listen to somebody who'd been in the Army as long as you are?
Correct.
But you know, that's one of the huge mistakes that young leaders make.
Right.
Is they think they know everything, and they think it's a weakness to ask questions and opinions and advice from somebody that works for them. And that's absolutely the wrong answer, because they have the experience in those that area. And you don't have all the experience, knowledge, skills, abilities. So use those people who have that in your organization that you have the privilege to lead.
Right. I think
that requires humility.
It does. Yeah. It does. And I think that's part of a servant leader, is that you understand that it's not all about you. It's about that team. And you use the people on that team to the best of their ability. And, you know, you're going to have some superstars and you're going to have some weak people. And your job as a leader, or certainly as a servant leader, is to use those superstars to the max amount you can without burning them out, and to make those weaker linked, the people who are the weaker links in your organization, have that professional development, have that training development to make them better so that you can use them more and use those skills and abilities that they bring. Because even at the weakest link, they're still going to have some abilities and skills that you can use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's another skill leaders need to have, is the discernment to be able to see who's got what strength, the best way to employ it or put it to use. And I'd love to find out more about your thoughts on the weaker links in the, you know, in the squad, in the crew, whatever, whether it's first responders or in the military. How do you approach them and kind of give them ways to start to grow into more of a leadership or a contribution to the group.
Yeah, and every organization has the people who are, you know, and I hate using the term weakest link, but, you know, a team is only as strong as it, you know, its weakest player, weakest person. So that really is, I think, a good way to put it. But every organization has somebody who isn't meeting the standard completely or could be better than they are. And so I think there's a couple ways to help do that. I said, number one is through a training development program. And you got to hold people to standards. You know, my philosophy was, look, we are going to meet the standard. Here is the standard, and we're going to meet it today. If we meet it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, guess what? We all get to go home early today. Mm-hmm. If we don't meet it, we're going to keep doing it and keep doing it until we meet it today. And if that means 10 o'clock tonight, that means we're here till 10 o'clock tonight. Mm-hmm. You got to train people to the standard. You're going to hold them to a standard. So how can you hold somebody to a standard you haven't trained them to? Mm-hmm. And then once you get them to that standard, you got to hold them accountable to that standard. So I think when you have somebody who isn't meeting the standard or could do something stronger, do something better to help that team meet that standard, because the team may be meeting the standard, but maybe they're not quite meeting it and somebody's making up for them. Mm-hmm. Then you got to come up with a plan on how to make that person better. I'm a firm believer in counseling people, and I think it's got to be face to face, and it's got to be honest. It's got to be professional, but it's got to be honest. Mm-hmm. And you know, the way I always like to do it is, first of all, I don't ever do it in my office, because right from the very beginning, now you've put that person on the defensive. Mm-hmm. I like to do it in a neutral place, outside if I can, with nothing in between us, not a desk, not just us sitting down on a bench or whatever. And I say, okay, look, here's the standard. Here's your performance. Mm-hmm. You're not meeting the standard. Now, here's the difference between a leader and a boss. A boss is going to say, you're not meeting the standard, fix it. A leader says, okay, you're not meeting the standard, here's where you are, and this is how we are going to fix it. And you come up with a plan that says, okay, in the next month, 2 months, 6 months, a year, however long you want to make it happen, this is the extra training we're going to do to get you to the standard. And you both agree on it. And then at the end of that 2 months, 6 months, year, if they're still not meeting the standard, now they have made a conscious decision not to meet the standard. And I think it's okay at that point to part ways and tell them maybe there's another organization that they need to go work for. You got to be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
You can't fix the problem if you're not honest.
Mm-hmm. How about where, because of changes in society, a leader is now facing new challenges? So, for example, police chiefs, command staff. Yeah, I wanted to know what advice do you have, or how do you envision the challenges being resolved for police chiefs, deputy chiefs now, given, you know, this primarily negative focus on police, you know, because of, you know, there are some police officers that have used excessive force or, you know, involved in a racial situation.
Sure.
So what advice do you have for command staff in policing?
Yeah, a couple things there. I mean, there's bad actors in every profession. I don't care what it is. Mm-hmm. Police, fire people, military, priests. I mean, every single profession, there's bad people. I mean, that's just a fact of life. Mm-hmm. So you can't hold everybody to that. You can't blame everybody in that organization because of one bad actor. You know, we got to get back to holding people accountable for their actions. Mm-hmm. and not everybody accountable for that action. Did you ever think you'd live in a country where police were, where we treat police the way we're treating them today?
No, no. And it scares me.
It is. It's scary. It really is. So, but I think you can look at it and you can look at an example in the military. Right after the Vietnam War, the military was looked that way.
Sure.
And, you know, as soldiers were coming back from the Vietnam War, they were spit on, they were cussed at, they were not treated well at all.
A lot of that had to do with the media, though.
It did. And I think a lot of this has to do with the media.
Absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
Let's be honest. But I think also what it had to do was that they had lost confidence in the military because senior leaders in the military were not transparent. They were telling lies. They were making up things. They were taking advantage for their own benefit, trying to get things done. And I think one of the things I always emphasize, and I think the police chief and assistant police chiefs could win from this as well. And Colin Powell said it when he became the Secretary of State. He said, or when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs during the first Gulf War, he said, he got on television and he said, "I will never lie to you. I will tell you the truth. No matter how ugly the truth is, you will always get the truth from me." And I think that we got to get back to doing that. I think we have to be transparent and we have to be as completely honest with whoever we're serving as much as we can. And I think that if we do that, that will take us, at least start us down that road where we're going to get some recovery from where we are right now, because we have to. If we don't, we are in trouble.
That kind of leads us into a really fascinating topic about communication, because we're talking what you're describing is outwardly facing communication to the public. We also have to communicate within the organization and up and down the chain of command. Can you speak to why that kind of communication is so important?
Well, I think that, you know, if you're going to be a leader, you got to be able to communicate. That is what leaders do. I mean, period. You got to be able to stand up in front of people and tell them what you expect of them, what we got to get done, how we're going to do it. If you can't stand up and do that, then you can't be a leader. It's that simple. So I think it's so important in everything we do. And when I talk about leadership, I talk about it across the board. I talk about verbal, nonverbal. I talk about written in all forms, memos, letters, evaluations, texts, emails, handwritten notes. I'm a huge believer in handwritten notes to help kind of give people an attaboy. I believe in handwritten notes hugely. Never underestimate the power of a handwritten note.
Sure.
And then also, I think that the other piece of that is that you got to be able to run meetings effectively. And if you can't run it, because let's face it, as much as we hate it, a lot of our time as leaders and as people is in meetings. And if you can't run a meeting effectively, if people dread coming to your meetings because you get nothing done, then you're wasting people's time. And I would simply look, there's three ways to make your meetings effective and efficient. Because if we're honest, we've all sat through boring meetings. Mm-hmm. And if we're really honest, as leaders, we've all led boring meetings, including me. But they don't have to be that way. You're the leader. It can be as good or as bad as you want it to be. And there's three things that you can do to run effective meetings. Number one, you got to have an agenda, and it's got to go out 3, 4, 5, 6 days ahead of time. If you're handing out the agenda when they're walking in the door, you're wasting your time and their time. You got to get it out early so they can actually do the research to talk about what it is you want to talk about. There's a concept. They come prepared to actually talk about it. That is huge. Number two, you got to have a time limit. If you go more than an hour, if I'm in a meeting of yours and you go past an hour, you have lost me. I may still be there, but I'm not thinking about what you're talking about. I'm thinking about the ball game, going fishing, having a beer or something, but it's not what you're talking about. So you got to stay within an hour. The shorter, the better. And then the last thing that you got to do is that you have to stick to the agenda. You got to be you just got to be brutal about that. I don't know how many times I've run a meeting and one of my superstars will throw out some great idea that's not on the agenda. And I'll say, look, that's a great idea. We can talk about that after the meeting. We can talk about it next meeting. But right now we're talking about what's on the agenda, period. Mm-hmm. If you do those three things, you will run effective and efficient meetings that people, they may not want to come, but they will not dread coming to your meetings because mm-hmm. you'll get things done. If you don't do those three things, then this is the advice I always give people. Put a box outside the door where you're going to have your meeting so mm-hmm. people can put their sharp objects in there so they don't poke their eyes out during your boring meeting. Because that it will be. It'll be a boring, worthless meeting. Mm-hmm.
This episode is made possible by Cover, an all-natural military-grade mineral sunscreen lotion. Providing broad-spectrum protection in an SPF 30, Cover blocks 97% of harmful UVA and UVB rays, but is light enough to allow your skin to breathe. First responders often spend long hours in the sun, and prolonged skin exposure is one of the hazards of the job. First responders love Cover because it won't stain clothing, and the 4-ounce bottle fits easily into a backpack or go bag. Go to kovr.respondertv.com to get 15% off all Cover sunscreen products. That's kovr.respondertv.com.
So I have a question about developing trust. What are the most important factors for developing trust between a leader and the subordinates?
So I think number one is you have to set the example. It comes down to integrity and character. Mm-hmm. Those two things are vital to trust. If you don't have those, nobody's going to trust you. And once they're gone, once your integrity is gone, it's gone. I mean, it is hard to get back. Growing up, my father used to tell me that, son, nobody can ever take your integrity away from you. You have to give it away. And he said, and that it is one of the most important things in your life. So guard it like it is. And so I've lived by that standard throughout my life. So right. I think integrity and character is number one. I think that the third piece, or the second, if you count those two together, is just as important. And that's getting to know the people that you have the privilege to lead. Because that's where trust really begins. Because right. leadership is about people, yeah. period. So you got to get to know them. And there's a couple ways that I always tell people that's really easy to do that. Number one, nobody wants to follow somebody who sits behind a desk all day. They want people who are out there with them. Now, I got it. Yeah. Leaders got to sit behind a desk every once in a while because there's forms we got to fill out. There's evaluations we got to do. But every chance you get, every opportunity you get to get from behind your desk and get out there and be with the people that you're leading, you got to take advantage of that because that starts to build trust. Number two is you got to get to know them. And a good way to do that is, number one, I always tell people, go out and find one person in your organization every day, just one, and find out one new thing about that person. Okay. Not about work, their personal life. What's their spouse's name? What's their kid's name? What sports do their kids play? What hobbies do they have? Find out one new thing about one person every day. And a good way to do that, I had a boss who retired, a 3-star general, and one of the best leaders I ever worked for. And he told me one day, he said, Oak, never, ever turn down a chance to go get your own cup of coffee. He said, two things happen when you do that. Number one, you show everybody who works for you that you're no better than they are. You got to go get your own cup of coffee just like they do. And number two, if you're lucky, you got two or three different ways to get to the coffee pot and back to your office. And you stop and you talk to people along the way.
I have another question for you. It seems like another one pops up every time we you answer a question. I get another question. So, with regard to integrity, how would you advise a leader in whose integrity is being challenged? There's gossip among the subordinates, rumors. Like, how do you deal with that? Because eventually you're going to run across people that have daddy issues, right? Yeah. They're angry at their father. Now you're their leader and they're trying to talk smack about you. So,
or you had to be honest with that person and you had to give him a bad evaluation and now he's vindictive. We've all done that. I think number one, you got to be transparent. So when you make decisions, when you, have to do things that, because, being a servant leader or being a leader, but certainly being a servant leader doesn't mean that you're always going to do things that people want to do.
True.
Because that may not be in their best interest. Even though they think it is, it may not be. So you may have to make them do things that they don't really want to do. Mm-hmm. But in the end, they'll see that it is in their best interest. Mm-hmm. So I think when you have to, when you're in those situations, you just have to be as transparent as possible. And again, have an open line of communication. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got, I have a good friend who was head football coach for Princeton University and then Stetson University, and now he's the president of Doan University in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And when he would pick his captains on his football team, he'd pick the normal captains, you know, offense, defense, special teams, whatever. And then he would pick three communication captains. And I said, Roger, what do you mean communication captains? He said, I pick three people who know that they have an open door. They can come in my office anytime. Anytime I put out information and it is either misunderstood or people don't understand or there's some question about what I'm talking about, they know that they can come in my office and say, hey, coach, you know what? I know you meant well with that, but nobody understands what you're talking about or something like that. So he said, not only did the communications get better in his on his football, he said his feelings hurt the first couple of times he came in there and told him that. He said, but then he realized that's what I told him to do. And he said the communication got much better and the trust got much better because now they understood that they could come and talk to me and I could put out better information and be more transparent about what I'm asking them to do and why I'm asking them. You know, that's the other piece is the why piece that you got to make sure that you address. You know, when I was a young leader or a young person, somebody told me to do something. I never asked why. Ever. Did you, David?
No, I don't think so.
This generation wants to know why. And there's nothing wrong with that. It took me a couple of years for this old man to figure out that there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But there is, because what I figured out is if you can give this generation the why, mm-hmm. and they understand the why, you got them. They'll mm-hmm. do whatever you ask them to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another piece of building that trust and overcoming some misconceptions is if you can make it very clear why you want things done.
And also as a leader, being able to know the different parameters of each generation, like you just mentioned, Oak, it can change the game as far as how you're communicating with somebody, right? What your expectation is, because they're almost like their value system is different depending on, you know, what decade they were born in.
It absolutely is. Mm-hmm. And the way they were raised and the way they process information and the expectations they have are absolutely different from our generation to this generation today and every generation in between, you know, the Gen Z, Gen X, Gen Y, whatever it is. You know, I've lost track of them.
Me too.
But there is, you know, and I've seen studies that show, you know, that there are different ways that you have to address them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, leadership is leadership. I don't care where you learn it. I don't care where you practiced it. The principles of being a good leader are the same. They haven't changed in 2,000 years, and they're not going to change for 2,000 years. You know, somebody who walks up to me and says, you know, Oak, I figured out this new thing about leadership. I said, get away from me. You know, I don't want to hear it because there are no new things. You may call it something new, but it's still the same thing. It was for your evaluation form or whatever. You needed something new, so you came up with a new term, but it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So I think what changes is how you have to address the people that you are leading, because everybody is different. Every generation is different. Every person is different because we're all different people, and that's a good thing. We don't want robots. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you make a conscious decision to get to know the people that you're leading, you'll understand those differences. You'll figure out that this person learns better or understands better during a meeting, or this person understands better if I talk to them face to face, or those type of things, because we're all different people. You know, there's that study out there that says a certain percentage of people learn better from reading, a certain percentage from listening, a certain percentage from seeing things, watching things, doing things. Yeah. So everybody's different, and you got to figure out on your team which one of those people you got to address a different way.
I unloaded 32 years of emotion.
This job isn't a joke, and it can hurt you.
How does yoga or meditation help with that?
Coming to terms with who you are.
You know, nobody calls us because they're having a good day.
It's really the suicide that becomes a huge issue.
People are more trustworthy with the dog.
Sleep deprivation helps them either be better or worse.
Completely secretive when we started this.
So it's pretty much taboo.
Take care of the people next to you.
First responders really being open about what they're struggling with.
If we know that, let's raise awareness.
Brings you together to talk about it, and it tells you you're not alone.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about problem solving within an organization. I'm sure in the Army, as much as it is in the first responder world, we're constantly solving problems. We're also we're doing it out in the field, but we're doing it internally in the organization. What have you found to be effective ways to help your members as a leader to solve problems better?
Yeah, so I Colin Powell is one of my heroes. I mean, he's probably the most impressive man I've ever met in person. So leaders solve problems. And Colin Powell said, look, if your people ever stop coming to you with problems, you're no longer their leader. Hmm. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, they have, again, that goes back to the trust piece, and it goes back to that's what leaders do, is they help solve problems, not only for your organization, but for your people. Mm-hmm. So one of the advices I always give people is this: if you really want to solve problems in your organization, number one, again, you got to be brutally honest about the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's brutally honest with yourself as a leader, with your leaders, and with the people around you. And, you know, I always use this example. General Eisenhower, who became President Eisenhower, said that whenever he had a problem, he would get up and he'd walk a circle around his desk. If he didn't find the problem, he'd walk a bigger circle around the offices outside his office. If he didn't find the problem, he walked a bigger circle until he found the problem. He started at his desk, he said, because I might be the problem. Again, you got to be honest. You know, we've all had those leaders who have made horrible decisions. You'd be standing there and somebody will say something and the hair on the back of your neck stands up and you're like, I will never do that. Because we're all going to make mistakes. We're human. So I think you got to be honest, number one. Number two, I think you have to include, if you got a problem that has to be solved, when you can, you got to include as many junior leaders in your organization as you can. Now, I got it. There's times you can't. When you're running into a burning building, or, you know, if you're a police officer and somebody's shooting at you, or like me when bad guys were shooting at me, I didn't have time to call everybody together to figure out how we're going to stop that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, this is bad man shooting at us. This is how we're going to fix it. Go stop it. But when you have an opportunity, call people together and say, okay, here's the problem we have. Here's the issue we have. This is the mission we have to accomplish, the job we have to accomplish. Give me some ideas. Mm-hmm. And let them throw ideas out to you. A couple things.
Right.
Number one, you will figure out very quickly, if you do that often enough, that sometimes your superstar will come up with a very stupid idea. And the guy you thought was the weakest link in your organization will come up with a great idea. You never know. I had a boss who retired, a 4-star general, and he said, Oak, a good idea is a good idea, whether it comes from a private or a general, the lowest ranking person or the highest ranking person.
Right.
And he said, and a bad idea is a bad idea, whether it comes from a private or a general. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So let them throw those ideas out. You're the leader. You're under no obligation to use any of them. And in fact, as the leader, it's your responsibility to figure out which are the good ideas to incorporate. And then what generally happens for me is what I've found out is this, is that I'll use a little bit of that person's idea and a little bit of that person's ideas and some of my ideas. And now we have a solution. But at that point, it's no longer Colonel McCullough's solution. It's our solution.
Right.
Now they got skin in the game.
Yes.
And now they have a reason to make it work. And that is huge. Mm-hmm. It's no longer me dictating how we're going to fix it.
Right.
We've now all come to an agreement that this is how we're going to fix it. Right. And I think if you can do that, I think you will find that, number one, you'll come up with better ideas because, again, you're using other people's knowledge, skills, and abilities, mm-hmm. not just your own. And number two, you've got buy-in because now you've allowed them to have a say. And again, it all goes back to trust. That starts to build the trust. Mm-hmm. If they know that you're willing to come ask them for their opinions, even if you didn't use it this time, you might next time.
Mm-hmm.
You start to see trust build even more.
But that tactic shows respect for the members, you know, and then in turn, they feel important. And, you know, I think that then they will be more apt to support you, you know, whatever idea is decided.
Sure. Absolutely. Even if you didn't use their idea, even if they didn't have an opinion on it, mm-hmm. they now say, okay, next time we have a problem or we got to figure something out, if the boss talks to us, I might have an idea and he may use part of it or all of it. So I think, you know, again, I think you got to involve the people, mm-hmm. use involve. The people who you have the privilege to lead because they are you would be absolutely shocked at how much knowledge, skills, and abilities they have. And you never know unless you let them express what it is that they're thinking. Mm-hmm. Let them express their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you don't have to use them for that time. But here's the other piece of it. They may come up with something that you may not use right then, but you may use it somewhere else on another thing.
Right.
So you never know.
When it comes to occupational cancer exposures, members of the fire service are some of the highest risk professionals nationwide. Firefighters Against Cancer and Exposures, also known as the FACES Foundation, is an advocacy organization established to bring awareness, resources, and peer support to responders in need of additional help in battling potential cancer diagnoses or critical concerns. The FACES Foundation was established by a national alliance of first responders to offer supplemental resources for firefighters. One of its core initiatives is cancer awareness in the form of prevention and early detection, supporting vigilance about occupational cancers and cancer recurrence through our national Get Checked Now campaign. Also, the FACES Foundation publishes a major public catalog of resources for the many areas of need, including information on clinical and mental health therapies, benefits and compensations, funding sources and financial strategies. For more information, please visit the FACES website at facesusa.org.
Yeah, I've seen that play out in shift meetings with a leader who encouraged that kind of participation and contribution from the group in our shift. And yes, maybe on a call in the middle of a high intensity incident, that's not the time to start taking a consensus. Right. But offline, post incident analysis, or a regular meeting to solve problems, that's a phenomenal technique to really, create a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. And you hit something right on the head there, David, the after the event. I'm a firm believer in reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Leaders have to reflect not only on your own personal performance, but on the performance of the organization that you're leading.
Right.
And in the Army, we do that very well, called an after action review, where after a major event or training event or whatever it is that we did, we'll sit down and we'll say, okay, this is what we wanted to get done. These are the circumstances that happened. Mm-hmm. This is what we accomplished. How can we get better? And even if you accomplish what you wanted to get done, you can always get better.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I don't care. Even if you think you hit it out of the ballpark, you can always get better. Sure. So throw it out there and let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things that leaders are afraid of sometimes, is saying, okay, how did we do? Because that's a reflection on you, obviously, because you are the leader. You are responsible for everything that did or did not happen. Even if it wasn't your fault, it is your fault because you're the leader. You're responsible for it. So leaders are kind of, lots of times they're hesitant to let people kind of throw things out there that might criticize something that they did or a decision they made. But that's the only way we're going to get better, is to reflect on what it is that we did. And so I think that's huge. After every major event, you got to have those discussions where you bring everybody that was involved and say, okay, how'd we do? What were we supposed to do? What's the standard? Where did we meet it? Did we meet it or not? And if we didn't, how do we fix it so we do the next time? And if we did meet it, is there something we can do even better? And I think you'll see your organization get better and better after every event, whether it's training or real life.
Well, I am so appreciative that you've joined us to speak about leadership, because it's a topic that it's near and dear to my heart. And I think it needs to be talked about and needs to be focused on as we are moving forward into the, you know, the next generation of upcoming leaders, emerging leaders, and figure out how we can best not only lead them, but also cultivate them as future leaders. So as we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
So one of the things that I always tell people is that it really is our responsibility as leaders to develop that next generation. Because if we don't do it, how's it going to get done? You know, and what really drove that home to me, I always understood that. But what really drove that home to me was when I was running my Army ROTC program, my last assignment on active duty, producing that next generation of leaders for the, not only for the Army, but for the nation. I had somebody who worked for me, Master Sergeant David Powell, and they say he worked for me. He was probably a better leader than I was. And we were talking about the importance of what it was we were doing. And he said to me one day, he said, "You know, sir, great leadership handed down from generation to generation is what develops great nations." And I thought, wow, what a powerful quote. And the most powerful part of that quote is that you can take that word nations and you can substitute anything you want for it. Family, fire department, police department, military, sports team, university, food bank, hospital. It doesn't matter, because every organization needs good leadership. So I tell all these young leaders, take that responsibility seriously, because we are going to reap what we are sowing. If you're not doing a good job producing that next generation of leaders, then we're going to pay the price down the road. Because at some point, old people like me are going to turn around and hand it off to the next group. It's going to happen.
So yeah, it's inevitable.
We got to make sure they're ready to take that and do a better job than we did.
All right. Well, I know you're out there speaking rather actively. Can you share with us a little bit about where you're going to be or any recent events you've spoken at?
Yeah. So I've been three or four events here over the last month or so. I was at the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association up in Bend, Oregon, which I loved. What a great event. Great Americans there. And then I've done a couple other. I did a fiduciary association. I did a healthcare risk management, which was a lot of first responders as well, nurses, doctors, EMTs, paramedics. And then I was also at Duquesne University, spoke with them. But this month, a couple of weeks, I'll be in New York City talking to a group that is construction. So it'll be the president, CEOs of construction companies that build hospitals, nursing homes, those kinds of things. And then in October, I'll be in London. So talking to a group there. So seems like it's moving in the right direction. I loved it now talking. That's my passion right now, is to talk to as many people as I can.
Beautiful. And you have an amazing website. How can people find you on social media or your website there on the internet?
Yeah, so my website, www.ltcoakmccullough.com. On there, it has my cell phone number, my email address. Always willing to talk to people if you got questions or if you got an issue and you want some advice, I'm happy to do that. But then it also has all my social media sites on there. Just click on the link and it'll take you. I'm on LinkedIn, which is what I use most often, and how David and I found each other was on LinkedIn. But I also have Instagram and Twitter and all those other things too. So always happy to connect with people and talk. Again, this is about getting the message out, whether it's on a podcast, speaking in person, doesn't matter to me.
Thank you so much, Oak, for spending this time with us, sharing all your pearls and nuggets and really real world experience with leadership. I know it's gonna have an impact on people that really need to hear this. So we appreciate you and wish you all the best with all your future endeavors.
Well, thanks, David. And thanks, Stacey, for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it. I had a great time.
Thank you. So did we.
Definitely did. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe. We're a Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV. BBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And our website has past episodes and guest information. It's ResponderTV.com. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.